It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The United Nations announced this month that there are now 8 billion people inhabiting our planet. Is that a lot or is that not enough? Human population is a complicated topic. Join in on our demographic destiny. What concerns you about the numbers and the future of our planet? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kathleen Mogelgaard is here, president and CEO of the Population Institute, which promotes universal reproductive rights and seeks to achieve a world population in balance with a healthy global environment. Kathleen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
So at 8 billion people, can the planet sustain all of us? Where do you see this?
It is a complicated question. So the impact of humanity on the planet is a combination of a number of different variables. The numbers that we are, the consumption that each of us carries out in our lives, and then the technology that is in place that manages that impact on the planet, whether it's renewable energy or whether it's coal, for example. So the answer to that question is that it really depends on the choices that we make and the options that we have.
And it sounds like, as what you're saying, that it depends on how we function and how we live and, you know, just how the population works in the world. How do you view that functioning in light of people who are really concerned about the slowing pace of population growth? That low birth weights is a much greater risk to humanity than global warming.
Yes. So it's interesting to me that there is a lot of hand-wringing about the slowdown of population growth rates. And I do want to mention that we are not anywhere close to experiencing global population decline. We've sailed past the 8 billion population milestone last week. Demographers at the United Nations tell us that it's likely that we will probably add another 2.4 billion to the planet's population before we level off somewhere maybe in the 2080s. So we're not anywhere close to experiencing global population decline, although we are seeing some countries whose population growth rates have slowed down and some countries whose populations are in decline. And that certainly does have implications for many things across society. It means that our populations in some countries are becoming older, you know, greater proportion of the population in the older age groups, for example. So how do we take care of the oldest members of the of our families in these kinds of situations when we don't have as many, you know, the same proportion of workers in the workforce in the population as we have in the past? That has implications for things like Social Security and other ways that we support an aging population. But these are things that we can plan for if we're thinking about it and understanding those kinds of implications. For me, I am much more concerned about the places in the world where rapid population growth is continuing. So at the Population Institute, we work with partners in the Sahel region of Africa, for example, where many of those countries are on track to double within just a generation. That creates a lot of challenges for things like poverty alleviation, for climate change vulnerability, for food insecurity, and other issues that have implications for folks who are living in those places, but also increasingly has implications for people all over the world, because what we see as people become in increasingly difficult living situations, they're on the move. And this is a trend that we're seeing globally as people are struggling to seek a better life. People are on the move all around the world. And we see that in ways that can create a lot of challenges for security, for civil society. And we really need to be thinking about places where population is growing rapidly and the kinds of programs we can put in place that will help to put the brakes on that population growth and extend rights and opportunities for people.
Oh, that's really interesting because, I mean, we see climate migration and the movement of people due to climate change and the pressures of global warming. But you're also saying that there are implications with population for why people move.
Oh, for sure. you know, as populations in local places grow very rapidly, it puts up a lot of challenges for the local resource base to be able to sustain that population. So, and that, as you mentioned, it comes into conflict with the changes that we're seeing from climate change, whether that's drought or extreme weather events, can have significant implications for agricultural productivity, for example. So in places where there are communities that are reliant on local agricultural systems for their food supply, as the population is growing, and at the same time, changes in the climate are making it more difficult to have sustained farming and food supply, more and more people will be on the move.
Talking about the more than 8 billion people now living on the planet, Kathleen Mogelgaard is president and CEO of the Population Institute. You can join in with your questions and how you see this milestone, 800-642-1234. Let's talk about food for a moment. I mean, obviously, a challenge if the world keeps growing is how to feed everyone on Earth. Does population growth lead to increased hunger?
In many parts of the world, it does. I mean, global hunger is a result of many different factors. But what we have seen in 2021, there were close to 1 billion people globally who were affected by hunger. And this is a trend that is moving in the wrong direction. The last several years, we've seen more and more people each year affected by hunger. Part of that does have to do with a growing world population, but of course there are other factors that affect that as well. And I know in this moment we're hearing a lot about the conflict in Ukraine, for example, disrupting supply chains for agricultural supplies and fertilizer in particular. And that's something that is going to exacerbate global hunger. But the population factor is one that we need to keep in mind, certainly as we think about longer term trends for ensuring that we can reduce the food insecurity that people are experiencing around the world. It's not only a question of food supply, but also the demand on supply that is there. So as we think about a growing world population, it's something that we need to keep in mind as we figure out how we're going to feed a growing human family.
China and India both have more than 1 billion people, and the census estimates show around 333 million people here in the US, making it the third most populous country. How does population growth around the globe affect us where we live? Like, drive this home for us. How does population growth affect life in places like Wisconsin?
Well, part of that, I think, goes back to what we were talking about just a few minutes ago in terms of global mobility, more and more people being on the move as the planet becomes more crowded and as the planet experiences more challenges like climate change and natural disasters or conflicts around the world. So that is something that affects everyone in every corner of the world when we have people who are on the move and people who are experiencing deep hardship or disaster. So that is something that we need to keep in mind that as the world's population continues to add another billion and another billion, we will see more people on the move. We will see more natural disasters, more climate-related disasters, and we may see more conflict. That certainly has geopolitical ramifications and implications for people everywhere. So that is something in a large global sense that we will all be affected by over time. But in a really kind of more conceptual sense, I think there are important dimensions of population growth that relate to the health and well-being of people, and in particular to the rights and status of women. This is something at the Population Institute that we are very interested in because we understand that persistent population growth around the world is often connected to a lack of reproductive autonomy, which is a concept that I think we are all becoming more aware of with what's happening domestically in the United States on reproductive rights, with the overturning of Roe versus Wade and the Dobbs decision by the Supreme Court this summer. And we're having a deeper understanding of what it means to have bodily autonomy and reproductive autonomy in one's life and how that has important implications for our lives as individuals, for our families, for our communities. And when people are unable to exercise that kind of reproductive autonomy, what we see is more unintended pregnancy. We see higher fertility rates around the world. We see ongoing population growth that can really have implications for the health and well-being of people and the societies that they live in and the local environment, as well as the planet as a whole. So I think this is something that no matter where you live in the world, we can have a deeper appreciation for reproductive autonomy, for the need for reproductive rights, and for people to be able to make their own decisions about how they want to have their own reproductive choices in the future.
Kathleen Mogulgaard with us leads the nonprofit Washington, D.C.-based Population Institute as we explore the consequences of our human population, the challenges it creates. Join in on what 8 billion signifies to you, what the trajectory means for our climate, humanity, reproductive rights. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore population growth, what 8 billion people signifies to our planet. Join the conversation with your population questions, comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kathleen Mogulgaard is president and CEO of the nonprofit Population Institute and stays with us. Let's bring on a call now. Andrew in Palmyra. Andrew, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Hi there. I just had a quick question. So Bill Gates had a TED Talk that he gave in about 2010, 2011. It was called Innovating to Zero. And in his TED Talk, he talked about how through the advancements of vaccines and other medical improvements that the rate or the population of the planet, the growth rate of population could be reduced by 10 to 15%. And I was curious if your guest would support things of that nature as well, or what her thoughts are on that.
Andrew, thank you for the call. Kathleen, your insights there.
It's a really interesting question. I'm not familiar with the TED Talk that Andrew is talking about, but it certainly is the case that dramatic improvements in public health is what has helped us arrive at the 8 billion population milestone. You know, people mm-hmm. are living longer, healthier lives than we ever have before. We've got fewer children dying in infancy. We have fewer mothers dying in childbirth. You know, we've really made remarkable progress in extending people's lives and public health advances. Many of the kinds of public health advances that are supported by the Gates Foundation is something that is really helping to address mortality rates in areas that are remarkable in progress. That progress has been uneven around the world, and it's something that as we pass this population milestone, it's an opportunity to reflect on the places where we've not yet been able to reach everyone with life-saving medications and with public health advances so that people can live longer and healthier lives. And as we have seen, history shows us that over time, as people have greater confidence that their children will survive, and as they have opportunities for education, as they have opportunities for entering the workforce, we do see that fertility rates decline over time. Mm-hmm. And that is something that will put the brakes on population growth and lead to greater sustainability and health and well-being.
I just want to explore the thread on reproductive autonomy. As you see, you know, China officially ending its one-child policy at the start of 2016. They introduced a three-child policy last year. What impact do those government policy interventions and laws have on population and demography? How do you see them?
Well, I think when we look at the different kinds of population control policies that have been put in place in different countries through history, what we see is egregious violation of human rights. And what we see is an attempt to have top-down engineering of demographic outcomes that ends up not serving people very well and ultimately not serving countries very well. With the example of China that you've just raised, they have some significant demographic challenges now with the aging population, with a smaller workforce, and there are deep concerns about how their demographic age structure will be able to sustain their economy. You know, it's really been a challenge for China to have that kind of population control policy. So I think what we believe at the Population Institute and a lot of groups working in this space really truly believe that the best thing we can be doing is ensuring that people have access to information, that they have a full range of contraceptive options available to them, that they understand fully the different kinds of side effects that can come with different contraceptive methods, and that people really can make the choices that are the best for them, that they can afford the care that they need when it comes to their reproductive health and family planning options. And that within that, you know, that needs to be nested within situations where women have autonomy in their lives and the ability to make these kinds of decisions that are well supported and that they have options on the table before them. And when we do see these conditions in place around the world where women have options in their lives, where girls have been able to go to school, and where there are robust reproductive health and family planning services available to people, we do see fertility declining in ways that puts the brakes on population growth.
Talking with Kathleen Mogelgaard, President and CEO of the Population Institute, looking at the milestone of 8 billion people on the planet. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Kathleen, how can the U.S. help parts of the world that are experiencing rapid population growth? What can we do?
Historically, the United States government has been a real leader globally in providing support for countries that are interested in expanding reproductive health and family planning services to their populations. This has been a real success story of U.S. foreign assistance through the decades. But unfortunately, what we've seen in the last decade or so is that the U.S. government's support for reproductive health and family planning programs as part of our foreign assistance has stagnated. We've leveled off in our funding and our support for these kinds of programs around the world. And yet, during this decade that our funding has stagnated, we've seen the largest generation in history entering their childbearing years. So I think it's really important that we continue to send signals to our own government that these kinds of investments in reproductive health and family planning that help people achieve reproductive autonomy in their lives all around the world are really worthwhile investments for the health and well-being of people and their families and their communities, but also something that helps to set us on a path toward greater sustainability in terms of future population growth. So to me, that's something that the United States can be doing, is reclaiming their leadership role in the support that they provide in foreign assistance for reproductive health and family planning services.
Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed this conversation, and I hope that we'll be able to continue to have really important conversations about population and implications for society.
Yes, Kathleen Mogelgaard is CEO of the nonprofit Washington, D.C.-based Population Institute. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.